Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
The family of Nicola Bully have said they're in agony as they await the identification of a body found in the river near where she went missing. Yesterday, a body was found about a mile from where Nicola was last seen walking her dog beside the River Wyre in Lanarkshire after she dropped her daughters to school. And all the way through this 3-week investigation, officers have said their main working hypothesis was that the mother of two fell into the river, but her friends and family had claimed there was no evidence whatsoever to support that theory. For the latest on this, I'm joined on the line by Sky News crime correspondent Martin Brunt and former Scotland Yard detective Peter Blexley, and you're both very welcome. Thank you for joining us. So Martin, what is the very latest on the investigation into the discovery of the body yesterday?
Everybody's waiting for the formal identification. Everything points to this being the body of Nicola Bully. Her family were informed. The chief investigating officer, detective, was there at the scene. There were no other reported missing people. The body was recovered about a mile from where Nicola was last seen, just over 3 weeks ago. So I don't think there can be any doubt that this is Nicola Bully's body, but police will need to be absolutely certain before they make it clear that that it is her. And I imagine it'll be the identification process will be completed today. I think there are a number of reasons for that. DNA surely will be the quickest way of identifying her, but she was wearing very distinctive clothing. If that's intact, that will be a very good indication. The water has been very cold for the past 3 weeks. If she has been in there that long, I still think decomposition of her body won't be terribly advanced. It may be possible to physically identify her. A grim prospect for her partner Paul, but he's probably expecting to have to go through that. But I think by the end of the day, we should have been told by Lancashire Police that this is the body of Nicola Bully.
Can you tell us, Martin, a little bit about the circumstances around how the body was discovered yesterday?
Well, it was a call from some member of the public. I've seen photographs today of a couple who appear to be, or certainly a man and a woman at the scene, who appear to be pointing to the direction of where the body was, caught up, we think, in a kind of backwater section of the river, a very reedy area, and clearly an area that perhaps was difficult to explore. What we don't know is whether the body had been there since Nicola vanished or whether it had floated out towards the sea and come back as the tide came back in. I mean, all of those questions police will be exploring. Perhaps won't ever know the answers to it, but it looks as though somebody walking near the riverbank spotted the body and then called police.
And do you know, Martin, had that area been searched previously?
Yes, it had. I don't know how extensively. I mean, police have searched from the point where Nicola was last seen. They've gone mostly downstream, right along to the river estuary and beyond, out into the sea in Morecambe Bay. They've also gone, I'm told, a little bit upstream from where she was last seen, because experts say that the movement of currents can shift bodies, can shift all sorts of debris caught in the river in different directions, and they can go in one direction and then come back. Mm-hmm. That part of the area will have been searched before, and of course that will raise questions about how thorough that search was done.
Now, there's so much controversy around this case, which we'll discuss in detail in a moment with both yourself and with Peter, but why do you think, Martin, given your experience, why did this missing person case grab the attention of just about everybody in the UK and so far beyond?
I think there are lots of reasons for that. It's not difficult really to understand why. It was a mystery to begin with. There was absolutely no evidence of what had happened to Nicola, nothing to explain how she vanished. As her partner Paul Ansell said, she appeared to have vanished into thin air, and people don't vanish into thin air. There had to be an answer. And in the absence of firm evidence, people come up with their own theories. You know, we saw that get out of hand when those armchair detectives turned up at the scene, and a lot of them caused a lot of upset by streaming live as they walked along the riverbank their own theories. That was very upsetting for local residents and for the family. But there were other things that captivated people. There were those many photographs that Nicola took of herself, those selfie photographs, many of them at the scene where she disappeared. She was a very attractive, smiling figure. She was the mother of two young daughters. People's hearts went out to those two little girls waiting at home for news of their mother. But also, I think Nicola was a very ordinary person. It was her very ordinariness that attracted people. She disappeared when she was doing some very mundane things that thousands and thousands of people do themselves. They could picture themselves in her position, getting up early, making breakfast for the girls, taking the girls to school, dropping them off, taking the dog for a walk, walking through the countryside. Those are things that everybody does on a regular basis. And she was the picture that was painted as was of a hard-working mother who could juggle lots of things. I mean, even while she was walking the dog, she was on a conference call to colleagues at work. All of that helped people identify with her.
And then we had the information, and Peter, this might be where we'll use your expertise, Peter Blexley, former Scotland Yard detective, the information released by the investigating police last week about difficulties that she was facing in her life. They said that she had difficulties with alcohol brought on by dealing with the menopause. What was your own take on their actions in releasing that information?
Well, to be perfectly frank with you, Lancashire Police's release of information to the public via the media at three principal press conferences has fallen way, way short of what I would have expected and how it should have been done. If we go back to the first press conference, which was presented by a uniformed superintendent called Sally Riley, she was keen to very robustly tell everybody to stop speculating. And yet, in answer to a question from a journalist, she did exactly that and speculated herself. She told us also that the investigation had been reviewed by the National Crime Agency. And that was later contradicted at the press conference by Detective Superintendent Smith last week. And of course, when Smith and the Assistant Chief Constable Peter Lawson sat side by side on Wednesday of last week giving their press conference, it was released to the media that Nicola had been immediately classified as a high-risk missing person due to her vulnerabilities. And Lawson said, those are private and personal, and we're not going to expand upon them. Well, a few short hours later, they did a catastrophic U-turn, released the information that Nicola was suffering from issues with alcohol connected to the perimenopause, and the complete storm blew up. And really, it's a storm all of Lancashire Constabulary's own making.
Yeah, Peter, I thought, though, given that the family said that they were aware that that information was about to be released, that they had approved that further expansion on her vulnerabilities being released, and that the reason they approved of it was to try and clamp down on some of the speculation around the case.
I am sure that the family were spoken to frequently by the police and were consulted with regards to the media strategy, the release of information. In fact, I think I'm over-promoting it by calling it a strategy because the information release was pretty woeful throughout. But if we could rewind to the start of the search for Nicola, I think if the police, because we need to be aware that the police had actually gone to Nicola's home on the 10th of January, some 17 days before Nicola went missing, and they were accompanied by health workers. So it's fairly reasonable to work on the theory that even before she disappeared, Lancashire Police as an organisation were aware that there were issues around Nicola. That matter, we were told last week, is still under investigation, and it's kind of baffling to think what could have happened in that home that would still need to be under investigation weeks later. And that matter, Lancashire Police have reported themselves to the police regulator, the Independent Office of Police Conduct. So all this stuff will come out in the wash, but essentially what I'm trying to say is that in the initial stages of the search, if the police had said to the media, and I'd be quite interested to see what Martin might have to say, if they'd said, Nicola is vulnerable, she's classified as high risk, but those vulnerabilities are around mental health issues, and we respectfully ask that you don't try and get us to expand on those further.
Martin, what do you say? Would that have been enough, do you think? Would that have ended speculation there?
I think there are lots of issues here. One of the biggest problems is that police forces don't have the relationship with journalists as they once did. I mean, blame Lord Leveson. The Leveson report 10, 11 years ago really frowned on the sometimes close relationship between detectives and crime reporters. And I know there were issues around phone hacking and stuff like that and corruption. But fundamentally, I think what should have happened was that if Lancashire Police had had a good relationship with journalists, they would have called us in at the start of this. And as Peter has said, they should have explained to us that there were these issues. And this would have been all off the record, not for use, but to help journalists understand what might lie behind Nicola's disappearance. And it would have shaped our coverage. And it certainly would have kept the lid on a lot of the speculation in the mainstream media. But of course, the problem is that where we used to have that kind of relationship, there wasn't the extent and proliferation of social media. Now, I don't know whether if they had talked to us, accredited journalists in the way I'm suggesting, whether that would have kept a lid on the speculation on social media. I really don't know, but I think it might have avoided that kind of car crash of a press conference and the subsequent release of information about Nicola's particular personal problems.
Well, it wasn't just that they weren't talking to you in the way that you suggest. They also weren't speaking publicly. Wasn't there a 10-day period, Martin, where nothing was said? There were no press conferences, so that allows all of the speculation and the TikTok juries to continue on with their work down at the scene, as you explained earlier, live streaming.
Well, police only really tell us what they think they need to tell us, and if they feel that there isn't a need to make any kind of appeal or explain anything or give an update on their investigation, then they won't do that. And that creates a vacuum. I mean, and particularly, as I said earlier, that there was no real evidence of anything to explain Nicola's disappearance. So in that vacuum, people will inevitably come up with not just conspiracy theories, but, you know, their own thoughts on what might have happened to. I mean, I did the same with my colleagues. We all sat around when we weren't live on telly, talking about what possibly could have happened, but we didn't do that on air, and we didn't make that public. But it's human nature to try to understand what had happened to her. As I said earlier, people so readily identified with Nicola for the reasons I've explained.
Yes.
I mean, at the same time as people were poring over the story of Nicola Bulley, they were watching those dreadful scenes from the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria, and sympathising hugely with the thousands of people who were dying. But people couldn't identify with those victims 2,000 miles away, in hot, badly built buildings, as they could with Nicola, who was dropping off her kids and walking through the countryside.
Peter, could just one final word from you on the online side of this. Do you think, had there been more communication from the police, that would have countered all of those people who thought that they were free to speculate on TikTok and Twitter and Instagram and so on?
At the very first press conference held by Uniform Superintendent Riley, she said all the evidence indicates that Nicola's gone into the water, but didn't say what that evidence was. If that evidence had been released there and then, it would have quelled much of the speculation. But now, in 2023 and hereafter, TikTokers going to the scenes of crimes or where people have gone missing is going to become more and more prevalent because these people monetize their content. They make money from these streams, these videos, these pictures, these images, and they are going to be a phenomenon that will be around for some time to come.
Peter Blexley, former Scotland Yard detective, and Martin Brunt, Sky News crime correspondent. Thank you both very much for joining us.